Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. It has been a minute since I've covered a doe case on this channel, and if you've been around here a while, you will know how strongly I feel about reuniting the unidentified with their names. And if you don't know, I'm about to tell you. The thought of being buried anonymously fills me with such a deep dread. It's just this idea of living a whole life and just being forgotten, of all of that meaning nothing. It really scares me. So I have made it a small personal mission of mine to share the stories of as many does as possible, in the hope that maybe somebody out there might recognise a detail. Maybe a cousin who's whispered about in the family, a great aunt or a second cousin who just disappeared one day and nobody ever speaks about them. You never know. I actually feel like I've been covering less doe cases recently, but for a really good reason. With the rise of forensic genetic genealogy, more people have been getting identified than ever. For years, I've had a list of doe cases to cover as long as my arm, but nowadays, 90% of the time when I go to pick a case and go to start my research, I see they've already been identified. And this is thanks to the work of non-profits like the DNA Doe Project or labs like Othram. People are being identified every single day in the USA and across the rest of the world. However, there are some cases that continue to baffle, such as today's case, that of a man known simply as the Gentleman of Heligoland, pulled from the North Sea 30 years ago in 1994. Despite numerous public appeals, he has never been identified, but the authorities do feel like they're getting a little bit closer. But even once he's identified, the question will remain: how did he end up dead in the North Sea? Who was responsible? How did no one ever report him as missing? He was nicknamed the Gentleman due to the formal seeming clothes that he was wearing, a suit and a tie, but he was found floating in the North Sea. It was the 11th of July 1994 when a German border guard boat discovered a body in the waters 20 kilometres west of a small German archipelago called Heligoland, which is basically a cluster of islands in the southeastern corner of the North Sea to the northwest of Germany. The islands have a very low population. As of 2020, there were 1,399 people living there, and this was even less in 1994. So if somebody went missing off these islands, people would have noticed quite quickly. So it was obvious quite early on in the investigation that whilst the man was found off the coast of Heligoland, he probably wasn't from the islands. The islands are fairly small, they have a low population. As of 2020, there were 1,399 people living there, and this was even less in 1994. So if somebody went missing off the island, somebody would have noticed quite quickly. So it was obvious quite early on in the investigation that whilst the man was found off the coast of Heligoland, he probably wasn't from the islands. And honestly, it was quite incredible that this body was even found by the border guards, because this man had 6 kilograms of cast iron weights tied around his body. He had 2 cast iron cobbler shoes, each weighing 3 kilograms, tied to his waist. And I hear you asking, what is a cast iron cobbler shoe? Don't worry, I had the same question. They're basically an old school shoemaker's tool around which cobblers would design and fit their shoes. The cast iron ensuring they were sturdy, they would last for many, many years without any wear and tear. Although the Gentleman was found in 1994, these cobbler shoe irons were found to be made in the 1920s or 1930s. They were both for female shoes and were embossed with the initials AJK, which was later found to be a trademark of a company from Kingswood in Bristol here in the UK. The company was called AJ Jackson. This was the first big lead in the case. It seemed to be huge, but many years had passed since the 1920s and AJ Jackson had ceased trading in the mid-1960s, so 30 years beforehand. So who knows what could have happened to these shoe irons in the 3 decades since then. Had they remained in the hands of somebody who worked for the company? Had they maybe been donated and somebody else had bought them? Either another cobbler or just somebody who collected things like this? Had they been handed down generations as a family heirloom? I saw some information online that a lot of old shoe irons would now be used in department stores as mannequin feet to weigh them down properly. So all in all, this lead didn't really end up being that good of a lead. It didn't lead anywhere. How many times can I say lead? Whoever put the Gentleman's body in the water and tied these weights around his waist presumably intended to ensure that he drowned or he sunk to the bottom. They did not ever intend for him to be found. Of course, there is always a chance that he tied these weights to himself, that perhaps this was a case of suicide, but the injuries found on his body seemed to suggest otherwise. He had very clear signs of blunt force trauma on his head and upper body. It seemed as if he had been attacked, but investigators haven't actually released all that much information about the injuries. We don't really know much about them. We just know that these injuries were definitely caused whilst he was still alive, and Locate International has described it as a catastrophic blow to the side of the head and the rib cage. So it's not like he'd gone in the water, been knocked around and received these injuries. Like, no, he got these injuries shortly before his death when he was still alive. So what do we know for sure about the Gentleman? Well, we know he was a tall man. He was 6'5", 196 centimetres. He quite literally would have stood out in a crowd. He was very slim build, apparently only about 11 to 12 stone, and he was thought to have been between 45 and 50 years old, so he was likely born during the mid to late 1940s. If he was still alive today, he'd be in his 70s, maybe about to head into his 80s, so when he died, he had a lot of life left to live. I think about the fact that I was born in 1994, just 1 month before his body was found, and I've lived a whole life in that time, and he would still be alive.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Composite sketches have been created of this man in the years since, but it's very important not to hold too much weight on these sketches because these are estimations at best. He had been in the water for quite a while, he was quite severely decomposed, and it's impossible to estimate things like hair colour, hair length, eye colour, etc. The only information I could find about how long they thought he'd been in the water came from an article in The Mirror, which did suggest that he was believed to have died up to 7 months before he was discovered. So he'd been in the water for 7 months. He was severely, severely decomposed. With that, the most distinguishable thing about this man was his clothing, and that was thought to provide a lot of clues about where he may have come from. As I mentioned earlier, he was dressed fairly formally in almost a full suit. Incredibly, although he was found in 1994, the information I'm about to share with you about his clothing and the information I already shared about the shoe irons wasn't actually released to the public until 2022, just 2 years ago. In February of 2022, the French police released a new photo fit and new information as part of a media appeal to try and identify this man. But without all of this information, it doesn't seem like they'd really shared anything previously about this case with the public. There was no information that would have helped public come forward with leads, with tips. Don't get me wrong, I do understand investigators wanting to keep some information back in certain cases. I do understand how important that can be, but it does seem crazy to wait 28 years to release any information at all. Like, it's no wonder he hasn't been identified. But anyway, I digress. The gentleman wore navy trousers that were found to be made in France, a long-sleeved light blue shirt, British-made Church & Co. shoes, and a very distinctive striped wool tie. It had grey, brown, orange, and blue diagonal stripes. The tie was produced by Marks & Spencer's for both the French and English market, which did also include Canada, apparently, and I had no idea that at this time M&S was in Canada, or if you're Canadian, does M&S still exist over there? I don't know. But all of this, combined with the fact that the shoe irons were found to be from Bristol, led investigators to believe that the gentleman came from Britain, or maybe he came from just over the channel in France and spent a lot of time in Britain. Initial investigations in the mid-90s were all focused on Europe, particularly on this area of Europe, as there wasn't really any reason to believe that he came from anywhere else. Although he was found in Germany, there was nothing German about him. The clothes led investigators down many different avenues. It was believed by many that this man may have come from a more middle-class background, again, hence the nickname The Gentleman. He was wearing a very formal suit and tie, but investigators have since clarified publicly that this may not be the case because his shoes, although they were a very expensive brand, had been repaired before and were possibly even second-hand. They'd been resoled with Phillips soles and had replacement heels made by a company called Dinky Heel PLC, which again is a company in Bristol. Once again, Bristol just keeps coming up. So maybe this was just a man who liked to wear a suit. It doesn't necessarily mean that he was middle class. Perhaps it wasn't the fashion for men to wear suits every day in the 80s and 90s, but if this man was indeed born in the 40s, grew up in the 50s, 60s, it was possibly just very normal for him to wear a suit. Also, this might not have been his everyday style, like maybe on the night or the day on which he died, he was out at some formal occasion that called for wearing a suit. The tie, very specifically, also led investigators down some very interesting roads. The stripes and colours on this tie were very distinctive, which left them wondering if maybe the man belonged to a specific organisation or club or school. Maybe he'd been attending some sort of event to do with said organisation on the night of his death. And I'm unsure why they followed this line of inquiry so intensely, when it does also seem that this tie was just a mass-produced tie by M&S. But I suppose they had to look at every avenue available to them, but this led nowhere. For years, there was so little in this case. I mean, no surprise, seeing as the authorities shared none of this with the public. They were just following the clothes, but not releasing any information to the public who might have actually been able to help. There has been plenty of speculation, of course, as to how this man ended up in this location just floating in the North Sea, but nothing has ever been confirmed. Considering his British or French state of dress, it was speculated that perhaps he had fallen or been pushed off some sort of ship in the North Sea, but no one has ever been reported as missing. There was never any sort of SOS about a man falling overboard. Surely if he had been out at sea, there would have been a whole crew on this boat who would have noticed that he was missing and raised the alarm. Unless, of course, there's some kind of really deep cover-up going on here, like multiple people aware of what happened and just keeping quiet, I don't really know. But despite being found off the coast of Germany, as I said, there was nothing to suggest that he'd ever actually been living there, at least none of his clothes were German. I did try to look at tide charts from 1994 to see if it was possible if he had maybe been buried at sea off the coast of Britain or France and floated out this far to Germany, but honestly, tide forecasts from the first half of 1994 aren't really easy to come by, and besides, I can't read something like that and understand it, so I don't know even where I tried to look, to be honest. But one thing I can't really get past in this case is the use of the weights. Like, somebody tied weights around his waist to intend for him to sink down to the bottom and never be found. So either he died on land and was then transported out to sea on a boat and then was thrown overboard, like Dexter style, or he was already at sea when he died and was just disposed of in the water. But the use of the weights, like the shoe irons, makes me doubt that, because who's going to have 2 shoe irons on hand at sea? So I personally suspect that he died on land and was then taken to sea to be buried. So maybe should investigators have been looking at people with access to boats? Maybe. This investigation was obviously complicated by the international borders. The man was found in German waters, and therefore Germany were the ones initially in charge of the investigation. They're the ones who did the autopsy, who started it all. But when it soon became clear that this man was probably not German, the international authorities had to get involved. And still today, 30 years on, this is an international search, and possibly more international than anyone ever realised. In December 2021, the body was exhumed so DNA could be extracted to compare against databases. There was no match, obviously. At that point in time, 27 years on, this wasn't so much of a police search anymore. Like, of course, the police would follow leads as and when they came in, but this was very much a cold case now. It wasn't actively being investigated. So now researchers at Staffordshire University and Plymouth Margin University were working with the German police and the charity Locate International to try and find this man's identity. In February 2022, French police or German police, depending on which source you want to believe, released the new photo fit and all the information I mentioned previously in a renewed effort to identify the gentleman. And within just 2 months, they received over 50 new pieces of information, following each one through to the end. Still, no identity. But in 2020, there was also a massive break in this case, or maybe there was a massive break in this case. The cold case review team at Murdoch University in Perth, all the way in Australia, joined this hunt for the man's identity and decided to focus on isotope analysis. Now, I've spoken about isotope analysis countless times on this channel over the years, but it does still warrant an explanation every time. This is basically a technique that examines the ratio of isotopes and trace elements in a material to determine its origin. So basically, isotopes are present everywhere. They're in every single thing we consume. They're in the soil that our food grows in. Everything we put into our body has isotopes. And as our tissues, as humans, constantly renew themselves, the isotopes that we consume are being incorporated into our very being, into our skin, into our tissue, into our bones. And isotopes are different all around the world. The isotopes found in soil or in water in Germany, for example, are going to be wildly different from isotopes found in Australia. So using this theory, it should be easy to find out where a deceased person grew up and or spent a good chunk of their time in life. So the forensic scientists at Murdoch University decide to isotope test the gentleman's bones to see if that could provide any further information as to where this man may have come from, where he grew up. Isotope testing, in theory, should provide solid answers, but at this point in time, we've seen isotope testing be wrong so many times. Like, I have covered countless doe cases where isotope testing has been done, pointing towards the fact that they maybe grew up in one place, only for them to then be identified, and it turns out they grew up somewhere totally different. So I would take this information that I'm about to share with a pinch of salt, even though it does seem like most media and even the investigators have kind of taken it as gospel, which does seem very, very strange to me. But anyway, testing at Murdoch University in Perth just so happened to show that the gentleman had spent most of his life in Australia, of all places. The director of the Murdoch Uni Cold Case Review team, Brendan Chapman, said, "What are the chances that from this small collection of universities working on this case, one would be from the country where the man originated?" And yeah, really, like, what are the chances? At this point in 2022, authorities hadn't even looked in Australia's direction in this case. Like, there was no idea that this could be a possible home country for this man. Like, all of their efforts had been focused on Europe. And I think it is still important to maybe bear in mind that the man may have been in Europe for quite some time. He was fully decked out in European brand clothes. like French and British clothes. But then again, who's saying that those clothes were his? Maybe they were secondhand. We don't know. But anyway, as of 2022, the German investigators are now focusing any further effort on Australia, and they're working very closely with Australian law enforcement. They want to see if there were any mysteriously missing people in this time, and they've always kind of focused on men who went missing towards the end of 1993 or the beginning of 1994. This man may well have been Australian, but seeing where he ended up, the chances are he did die somewhere in Europe. His murderer is probably somewhere in France or Britain, maybe. The announcement about him being Australian or potentially Australian marked the end of Missing Persons Week in Australia, and they hope that the awareness raised over this week, the increase in people uploading their DNA to databases to try and match with missing people, could hopefully result in a match to the gentleman, especially now they knew to look in Australian databases. But once again, there was nothing. Which brings us to the case as it stands today in 2024, or almost 2025 actually. This is basically it. It doesn't look like there's been any movement in the past couple of years. Outside of North America, forensic genetic genealogy is something which comes across a lot more hurdles, a lot more barriers, so this isn't necessarily something that can be used in this case. I mean, the whole international thing definitely complicates this a lot further, like you're crossing German, British, French, Australian borders here. His DNA has been uploaded to all sorts of databases in all the relevant countries. Hopefully one day somebody closer to him will upload their DNA and it will strike a familial match. Hopefully somebody might see this episode and know of a family member who went missing at the end of 1993 or beginning of 1994. Considering I cover a lot of really historical Doe cases, this one really isn't that old, or maybe I'm biased because I was born in 1994, just a month before he was found, and I don't want this to be an old case, but what I'm trying to say is there will still be plenty of people out there who would have known the gentleman in real life, people who he had some sort of impact on. It's impossible to move through this world, to live for 40 to 50 years, and never have an impact on anyone. Like, somebody will have known this man. We just need to reach that person. All it takes is one person. And hopefully once we have his identity, the identity of his killer will also not be far behind. To me, there's something about this case that really screams.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Organized crime? I don't know why. Maybe it's the suit, maybe it's the weights tied around his waist. But then again, it kind of seems like these weights were just like something they had on hand at the time. Because at the end of the day, 2-3 kilogram cast iron cobbler shoes aren't really going to weigh a man down for that long. I don't know. Let me know what your thoughts and feelings are in the comments down below. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Mysteries and Histories. If you have a bit of time, I would love for you to go and leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast and spread the word. It would be much appreciated. I'll see you next week.